Still on medical issues, pain medication from algae. No side effects, no addiction issues. That's what Professor of Pediatric Anesthesia, Dr. Charles Birdie, and his team have been working on. Dr. Birdie co-founded the Pain Treatment Center at Boston Children's Hospital, the first pain management program for children in the world. The algae-derived pain medication is called neosaxitoxin, and Dr. Birdie will be talking about it via video link in the Cawthron annual lecture on Tuesday. The Cawthron Institute opened an algae research centre in Nelson earlier this year and has been working on neosaxitoxin for years and is preparing to produce it. Dr. Charles Birdie joins me now. Kia ora.
Kia ora. It's a pleasure to be here.
It's very nice. Very nice to talk to you.
So I would start by saying it's a little too soon to say no side effects, but we have reason to think greatly reduced side effects. And the principle of this is that neosaxitoxin is a novel type of local anesthetic medication, meaning that if you're having surgery and you inject local anesthetic in the layers of a surgical wound, or you do what's called a peripheral nerve block to numb the nerves going to that area of surgery, we have local anesthetics now that give pain relief, but they wear off too soon. They wear off in 10 hours or so. And so you get through the surgery comfortable in the recovery room in the first hours, but then it wears off. You can place tiny little tubes and infusion pumps to prolong the effect, but then the patient is tethered to a pump. And this approach, with this new class of medicines, gives more prolonged local anesthesia, more prolonged pain relief, without the requirement for being tethered to a tube and a pump. Does that make sense?
Yes, it does. Being tethered to a tube is one of the issues. The other issue is the risk of addiction to opioids.
Correct.
Which was it that drove you to look for an alternative?
So our interest in this, and this is a collaboration between myself and my colleague, Professor Dan Kohane, also at Boston Children's. It's more than 20, 25 years ago when, as I'd started doing pain management and learning local anesthesia, it was initially to get more prolonged pain relief. It was that we would do nerve blocks, we would do caudal epidural injections, things like that, and it would just wear off too soon. And in some ways, local anesthetics wear off more quickly in infants and children compared to adults.
Why?
So it's even several. That's an area we're studying. I think some of it has to do with how dosing scales relative to the size of the nerve and the size of the person. Some of it has to do with how local anesthetics leave a tissue and permeability. I can't give you a simple answer. For example, with spinal anesthetics, they last much less, and we think some of it has to do with the ratio of the surface area of the spinal canal relative to the volume of fluid in the spinal fluid. This is an area that we're modeling now, and it's I would be giving you an incomplete answer to say more than that. But the observation is that they do wear off sooner. And that's true for infants wear off sooner than adolescents, and they wear off sooner in 25-year-olds than 70-year-olds. So that if you're, as at our hospital or at, in Auckland at Starship Children's, you are taking care of children there, you have to face shorter duration. And early on, I looked at a number of ways to prolong local anesthetic actions, and you can take existing molecules, put them into tiny either lipid vesicles, much like is being used with some of the new coronaviruses, or polymer microparticles. But those were all old drugs and new delivery routes. And there was a literature on this group of molecules from algae and pufferfish and cyanobacteria, so natural source molecules that were called toxins, because if you ate the wrong sushi, you got paralytic shellfish poisoning. And there were reasons to think that there were ways to exploit the beneficial parts of those molecules and the combining of them with traditional local anesthetics to get kind of the best interaction for both effectiveness and better safety.
Why would you make the link between good use for anesthesia purposes and toxins? It seems counterintuitive.
Right. Well, many medications, if you think going back to the foxglove leaf producing digitalis hundreds of years ago, many medications as they come in nature have toxic effects, but in a small dose or in a local action, they have a safe action. And so these molecules were known to act on the same molecular targets as local anesthetics. They were known to act on sodium channels and work at Cothron and work with our collaborators in Chile and with other groups around the world have for years been taking naturally occurring molecules that cause biological effects, including toxicities, and trying to understand how they work and what makes them in another context, another dose, and another local application, a helpful medication. If you think about botulinum toxin, which is used people know of it for cosmetic use, but it's used in the treatment of spasticity and eye muscle conditions, things like that. Those are examples where tiny, tiny amounts of a molecule have a helpful medical use, even though if you give them in an uncontrolled way, you get a toxic use. But in any event, we looked at that 20 years ago, showed that it could be workable, started on the research to move it forward. And in parallel with that, people at Cothron in New Zealand were interested in how to understand outbreaks of shellfish and fish that had toxic effects when people ingested them. They became world experts at the chemistry and toxicology of analyzing those molecules, purifying them, and we're working along in that vein. And through a very complicated set of things, our interests overlapped. And when we got to the point where we were doing human trials, the molecules are essentially impossible to synthesize from scratch. So having a commercially viable route to produce them in enough yield and enough purity is something where Cothron's 30 years of work and our 20 years of work on the biology and the preclinical and clinical development of it has dovetailed to the point where we're now collaborating.
Impossible to synthesize from scratch means you have to grow truckloads of algae to produce it.
What I mean is doing it by chemical synthesis is many steps, toxic intermediates, not a good way. And yet these algae, Cothron and their colleagues have worked on how to grow them in a very efficient way that should be cost effective and safe, and to purify the molecule or the precursor of the molecule, make one simple chemical step and get a pure molecule for human use afterwards.
You mentioned human trials. Yes. Who were the trials done on adults, I'm presuming, rather than children?
Yes. So even though we are a children's hospital, drugs in general are administered to adults first. So in a very careful way, we took young adults, ages 18 to 35, with a very rigorous informed consent process and in a very monitored environment, and started administering it in stepwise increasing doses to numb a patch of skin and to test skin numbness. So it wasn't as if we just started doing surgical procedures and guessed it. We took healthy volunteers in a monitored way, looked at the drug's uptake and disposition in the body, looked at numbness, and were able to show that we could get numbness for 2 to 3 days under conditions where an existing local anesthetic would wear off in 6 or 8, 10 hours. So that gave us confidence that it was safe. We did a lot of safety, pharmacology, physiology, monitoring, that it its local actions on tissues were safe, and it's given us a initial signal to be optimistic about. It's not proof all the way through. It has to be studied in people of all ages, all medical conditions, all kinds of complexity, but at least it gives us a hope. Those are what are called phase one trials, meaning healthy volunteers who are under an informed consent conditions given a drug for research purposes. And the good thing is that in a way, numbness is biologically a lot simpler than medications for Alzheimer's or depression or many other complicated conditions, so that numbness of the skin or numbness of a part of the body after a nerve block in a volunteer has pretty good prediction of pain relief for a similar person having surgery in that part of the body. Does that make sense?
Yes. Did you trial men and women, black and white?
So by the conditions of how it's a very good question. For those first trials, and I would say let me first say that I was involved in the development, in the planning, in the submission to our FDA, but for conflict of interest reasons, I then turned over management of the trial to my colleague, Ms. Kim Lobo and Dr. Joe Cravero. But the requirements from the FDA are at a first stage because of issues of potential reproductive toxicity, they were men only, and they were people of a range of ethnicities and ethnic and racial backgrounds. Next, in preclinical studies, has been looked at in a way that would predict how men and women should respond, but as you point out, there may be differences, and so it will be absolutely important that once it goes into what are called phase two studies, that the phase two studies involve men, women, people from a range of ethnicities, people with a range of medical conditions, people who are large, small, heavy, thin, all kinds of diversity. And we certainly aim for that in the clinical trial.
Just very quickly, opioids, of course, highly effective pain reducers, but highly addictive. Could these be the answer to people who acquire opioid dependency during illness?
I think they might be part of the answer. So the first to say is, while opioids are effective for many kinds of pain, for patients recovering from surgery, a big theme in the last 15 years has been to give methods of pain relief that are strong and effective, but spare opioids. Aside from addiction and all, it's all the other things they do in the immediate post-surgical period of they make you sleepy, nauseated, constipated, dizzy, and getting reduced exposure to opioids helps that and the course of recovery, as well as reducing addiction. But addiction is a complex problem.
Interesting. Thank you. I've been talking to the Professor Birdie, Dr. Charles Birdie, who is delivering the Cawthron Annual Lecture on Tuesday.